Till Death Do Us Part is a lighthearted and sometimes satirical true crime podcast where we present our dysfunctional married take on serious cases involving other dysfunctional relationships. We hope you enjoy.
Hello and welcome to part two of episode 111.
I assume everyone is chomping at the bit like I am to hear the rest of this case.
I hope so. I hope people are here for part two.
As horrific as it must be, we want to hear it.
Okay. So Daniel's fed. I'm fed. His eyes aren't glazed over anymore.
Mm-mm.
So we can continue on.
I had a peppermint pretzel stick.
So you're feeling better?
Yeah.
And I left you on a cliffhanger, I said. But in April of 2003, everything changed.
Everything
changed. I don't need to remind you, right, who we're dealing with?
No.
Okay. It's only been an hour.
It's only been an hour. Now, you might want to remind other people.
Oh, that's true. Okay, so we're dealing with David and Belinda Temple. Belinda was found in her master closet, shot in the back of the head. And then there's no proof that David did this, no physical evidence, but they did find evidence that he had been cheating on her with a woman named Heather, who he claimed to love and didn't tell the investigators about it. So he went on to marry Heather. And then here we are, 2003.
Because there was no evidence and they just let it go.
Yep. And just because he was having an affair doesn't mean he killed his wife.
That's true.
The clothing worn by David and Belinda on the day of the murder, along with a lightweight jacket that belonged to David that had been found on the bed, were bagged and sent off to the FBI crime lab right after the murder. The lab was so backlogged that the results did not come in for 2.5 years.
What?
Yeah.
Well, then how could they determine that there was no evidence to go further
because
in
they
his
didn't,
direction?
Because they didn't have the physical evidence, so they couldn't move on until they had the proof that there was physical evidence.
Right, but what I'm saying is they didn't process the clothing.
They couldn't process the clothing yet. They had to send it to the FBI
right.
processing lab, which was so backlogged that they didn't get to these items of clothing for 2.5 years.
Okay, can I wrap my small brain around this?
Yes, sir.
So the case hasn't been dropped. He was just not held.
Right, because they had nothing to hold him on.
So it's still open.
It's still an open sort of investigation.
And
it wasn't closed.
Right, and he moved on, and so did Heather, with him.
Yes.
Even though there's still an open case of murder of Belinda. All right.
You got it.
I got it. I just don't get it.
Well, found on David's jacket was gunshot residue that matched the gunshot residue found on Belinda's clothing that she was wearing the day she died.
Do you think he thought he got away with it?
Absolutely.
Because 2.5 years went by, so he's like, I got nothing to worry about.
Wouldn't you?
Not anymore. Not after doing this podcast thing. Man, I'm paranoid. I'm looking over my shoulder about everything. Are you kidding?
Well, this was the physical evidence investigators needed to place David Temple at the scene during Belinda's murder in that closet.
Mm-hmm.
David was arrested and charged with Belinda's murder on November 30th of 2004.
And Heather said, I had no idea.
Almost 6 years later. He was arrested almost 6 years later.
I'm confused.
Okay, sorry.
99, it happens.
Mm-hmm.
2.5 years backlogged to the FBI. But after 2.5 years, they do process it. And they say, yep, gunshot residue, it matches.
But they had to do multiple testings and write out reports and all that stuff. So that didn't actually come out until 2003. But he actually wasn't arrested until 2004. This is how long this stuff
takes.
So
they had the confirming evidence. What, 3 years after the actual incident, murder, occasion?
They had the paperwork saying that it matched.
They had the TPS reports.
Right.
Okay.
TPS reports? You're quoting.
And then.
Wait, you got to say what you're quoting.
Office Space.
Office Space.
One of the greatest
you.
Movies mm-hmm. ever made. So then another 2 years goes by before they go, hey, we should probably arrest him.
Well, they just still needed to get an arrest warrant.
No, I get it.
Okay.
Yes. Is that true?
Yes. Okay. But what also happens is they had to make sure that they had a case against David that they could win, the state. It took that long for them to feel like they had enough evidence, circumstantial and physical, to arrest him for trial.
Gotcha. Okay.
Does that make sense?
So they were actively putting this case together.
Oh, yeah. They were way busy.
They just didn't physically arrest him for 5 years-ish after the actual murder.
Yes. People were still working on this case, trying to get enough evidence to prosecute David because everybody felt like he had done this because who else could have done this?
And the key evidence was the results of the FBI analysis of his clothing.
That was the physical evidence that they needed to start tying things together to take to the grand jury to see if there was enough evidence to prosecute him.
Okay.
And there was.
All right.
Is that good?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Making sure.
I'm just, if I was listening, which I am, I'm trying to get all the questions answered that I might have.
Yeah, I get it. That's why I like having a co-host.
All right. Who's not very quick on the uptake.
David was taken into custody, but makes bond, and he gets to walk out.
Who set his bond? I guess if they only set his bond because he had no priors and stuff, they gave him some ridiculously low amount.
Yeah, and I guess he wasn't a flight risk. I don't know why. I mean, his family did a lot of things for him, so.
Yeah.
That would have scared me.
Hmm.
Now, remember Kelly Siegler? Do you remember that name, Kelly Siegler?
Not really.
She was the Harris County prosecutor who tried Susan Wright with the murder of her husband. Now, Susan had stabbed her husband over 100 times while he was tied to the bed. Do you remember this case?
Yeah, kind of.
And Kelly had straddled her assistant DA on the bed. They brought the bed into the courtroom.
Yes, okay, thank you.
And she straddled him and was stabbing him over and over again. Okay, this is Kelly Siegler. She's going to prosecute this case. After the conviction of Susan Wright, Kelly was made the head of major crimes in Harris County, and this was her case to prosecute. So she was going to go hard because this was another case being played out in the Texas media and the media in the United States.
Okay.
Especially because Belinda's murder case was being compared to another tragic murder of a pregnant woman by her husband in California of December of 2002. Can you take a guess on who that was?
Pregnant woman, 2002.
Bay Area.
Oh, is it Peterson?
Yep, Scott and Lacey Peterson.
Scott Peterson. Mm-hmm. All right, yep.
So it was being compared to that case and that trial. And so it was starting to get headway again and get some like fire under it.
I forgot she was pregnant as well.
She was ready to pop too.
Oh.
The trial against David began on October 16th, 2007. But before the jury heard any of the evidence, the defense wanted the gun residue evidence thrown out.
Because
the defense attorney said that the FBI crime lab shared a ventilation system with an indoor shooting range. The gunshot residue from the shooting range traveled through the ventilation and landed on David's clothing.
Oh, and these guys are good.
And Belinda's clothing.
These guys
matched.
Are good. How the hell did they know that?
Because they went in there and looked, I guess. I don't know.
But imagine trying to.
Okay, but I got more. The judge agreed with the defense and the gunshot residue evidence on David's jacket was not allowed in state's evidence. They were not allowed to bring it forth during trial. So this was the only piece of evidence that put David in that closet when the gun was fired. Everything else was circumstantial. So this is all they had as physical evidence, and it's gone.
And even that took forever.
Right.
All right.
So the jury was taken through the day of the murder. A co-worker of Belinda's testified that Belinda had been frustrated that morning because she was trying to get a hold of David at his work so he could go pick up their sick son from daycare because she had a very important meeting after school. Unable to get a hold of David, Belinda left the school to pick him up and then drove home. So she was a special education teacher. One of really important things that you have to do as a special education teacher is like IEP reports and stuff and meetings with the school district and the parents and all these things. And she was really, really great at her job. And I'm sure she wanted to get all the meetings done that she needed to get done before she went on maternity leave. So this was a really big deal for her.
Yeah.
David did call Belinda back around 12:10, and then he left his school and drove home. Belinda was back at Katy High School by 1 o'clock. She attended the meeting and then left again between 3:20 and 3:30. She stopped by her in-law's house to pick up some soup and then headed home. And according to her father-in-law, she left their house around 3:45, so which would put her walking through her door into her home by 4. And then she was murdered a short time after walking into that home because she was still in her school shoes, which we all know she would have kicked off, being pregnant and stuff. And the glasses found broken lying near Belinda's body, the eyeglasses, were her driving glasses. Those weren't reading glasses.
So it seems to me, if I had to guess, she was taken by surprise, chased upstairs. She fled into the bedroom and like into a closet, and then she was shot.
That's one
theory.
So she
didn't have time to kick anything off.
Right. Because she did grab a cordless phone. Part of a cordless phone was found in the closet lying on the ground. And that's not the same phone that David used.
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So there's another little piece to the puzzle.
Huh. So right. Maybe the timeline is a little off.
It could be a little off.
Okay. I mean,
people don't know for sure, but your theory of her, you know, running up the stairs, grabbing the phone somewhere. I couldn't find out where that phone was grabbed from, but grabbing the phone, running up the stairs, and then into the closet as someone's chasing her.
Mm-hmm.
So, ugh, you guys, this is awful.
Yeah.
Prosecutors talked about the circumstantial evidence against David and his affair with Heather. But the defense played heavily into another theory that Belinda was killed by their 16-year-old neighbor named Riley Joe Sanders. Riley Joe Sanders lived next door to the Temples, and he went by Joe. He didn't go by Riley. He went by Joe.
Okay.
Joe attended Katy High School, where Belinda worked as, like I said, a special education teacher. And a few weeks before Belinda's murder, she had told Joe's parents about his excessive truancy, that he had actually cut class 131 times so far in that school year. His parents were annoyed, and Joe was grounded from using his truck. So he was in trouble. But now the 24-year-old Joe told the courtroom that he had nothing to do with Belinda's death. According to Joe's high school record, he was a pothead, and the worst things he ever did were cutting class and falling asleep at his desk. Other than that, he was a good kid and not a murderer. He wasn't aggressive.
So at the time of the murder, he was 16?
He was 16, and now he's up on the stand as a witness, and he's 24.
And he's already considered a pothead at 16.
Yeah.
Good for him. Why not?
Well, I mean, that was kind of the rage in 99. 98, 99, everybody smoked pot.
Yeah.
That was just what you did, unfortunately.
Some did.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's true.
A lot of kids did. A lot did.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
A shotgun belonging to Joe's father was added as evidence. The gun was the same type used in the killing, or that they believe was used in the killing, and even had a spent double-aught buckshot shell in the chamber, the same type of ammunition found in Belinda's head.
Ooh.
The gun was found hidden at Joe's friend's house, and there was no evidence found that this was the gun. Like, it really didn't match up. It was just very similar. But this friend did admit to having cleaned the shotgun. So there wasn't any brain matter, there wasn't any DNA, there wasn't anything like from a blowback on the gun.
Okay.
But the friend did say he cleaned it. The state also wanted the jury to know that Joe was there testifying without a subpoena and had traveled back to Harris County from Alabama just to testify and tell his story. He wasn't made to go there and testify. He went there on his own.
So his own free will, he's trying to help.
He's trying to help.
Okay.
Yeah. The back door was physically brought into the courtroom. There was a significant dent found in the door that the defense believed could have been made by someone, a burglar, aggressively opening up the door and hitting a hutch sitting directly on the other side. So like someone punched through that pane of glass, opened the door.
Flung the door open.
The door open. It hit the hutch, not breaking anything else, just that panel of glass, but leaving a dent in the door.
Okay.
But when compared to the hutch and the height of the door frame, the dent and the hutch did not match up. And there were knickknacks on top of the hutch that were not moved or knocked over. Like they weren't disturbed at all.
Right.
Which if somebody hit that hutch, things would have been disturbed. Three little boys who lived directly behind the temples said that they had heard what sounded like a gunshot after arriving home from the bus around 4 p.m. The boys got a snack and popped a tape into the VCR. They had rented the award-winning installment of Dr. Dolittle starring Eddie Murphy at the local Hollywood Video.
Fine movie.
The investigators had the boys stop the movie at the moment they heard the bang. It was 27 minutes in, which put the gunshot sound at around 4:30 p.m., which is the same time that David and the son are seen on CCTV footage at the grocery store, which is interesting. So they're trying to establish a timeline.
Yeah, to show like that he couldn't have done it.
Right, but these were little boys. Like these were under double digit in age.
That's kind of tough.
So I know. But the state had a witness who said that he heard a bang at 4:30 also, but it was from a truck that he saw drive by and heard this bang come from the truck. So it was a backfire. The truck backfired at 4:30. So they're saying that that's what the little boys heard was the truck backfiring.
A shotgun going off inside a house would be deafeningly loud. I mean, inside the house. Outside, it's going to make a deep boom.
But would it sound like a truck backfiring? I don't know if I could distinguish that.
Maybe. I mean, shotguns sound particular, a certain sound, but I guess so. It could.
I mean, if you're a little boy.
It could be confused. Yeah. Yeah. If you're a little kid, you're not going to know the difference.
Okay.
I mean, depending on the backfire of the vehicle.
Well, the trial came to an end, and on November 15th, 2007, David Temple was found guilty of the murder of his first wife, Belinda. He was sentenced to life in prison. But this case isn't over yet, because it's about to get even crazier.
I figured that that was not it.
In 2012, 5 years after the conviction, a man by the name of Daniel Glasscock called David's attorney and told him that he had a story. A few days after Belinda was murdered, he had been hanging out with Joe Sanders, Riley Joe Sanders, and his group of friends. Daniel had gotten up from the conversation to visit the bathroom. When he re-entered the room, he overheard Joe say that he had killed a dog during a botched robbery and put the animal in the closet. Daniel believed that the dog was a metaphor for Belinda Temple.
Oh.
That Joe had shot her after she walked in on him in her home. Okay?
Okay.
Daniel said that he had shared this piece of information with the police, and they investigated Joe but found no grounds to investigate further, meaning the police did take it and investigated it, but there was nothing linking Joe anymore to this murder. So Joe was not a suspect. At 16 years old, he was not a suspect. But this got the defense team thinking, what else had they not been told or shown from the state? Because the state had this information from Daniel, but never shared it with the defense.
Aren't they required to share?
Okay, evidence? Well, so he's thinking, was there evidence held by the police and the prosecution that would have helped with David's defense? Correct. Was an innocent man still behind bars? 14,000 pages were found in the state's possession that contained information gathered by the police that was never shown to the defense team. That possibility could have helped with the defense's case during the trial. Among the evidence found in the old police files were photos of a break-in that had happened only 9 days before Belinda's murder. The back door window had been smashed to gain entry. So that was another piece of evidence that wasn't shared with them.
It's a likely story.
Later admitting to the crime were some of Joe Sanders' friends, but Joe had not been with them. So these friends of Joe's admitted to the burglary 9 days before, but Joe wasn't there.
Wow.
In 2015, David's appellate attorneys secured a new hearing, claiming that evidence was withheld during the trial. Kelly Siegler was called to testify. She said that the state followed the law and that certain things were not shared with the defense, but that it was in accordance with the rules and law of the prosecution's office at that time, which makes me believe that things have been changed.
Interesting.
But at that time, they didn't have to share everything.
Oh, okay.
At the end of the 4-week trial, the judge said that there were 36 items of evidence that the state should have turned over to the defense or were turned over too late to actually be used in the trial. The judge recommended that David Temple be given a new trial, and the Texas State Court of Criminal Appeals agreed with the judge's opinion, and on November 23rd of 2016, David's conviction was overturned because he was not given a fair trial. David was released from prison on December 28th after posting a $30,000 bond and serving 9 years of his life sentence. It is believed that due to the stress of hearing that David was being released from prison, Belinda's mom had a fatal heart attack. So sad. David had been out of prison for 2.5 years when the second trial began on July 8th, 2019, 20 years after Belinda was shot and killed in her home. 20 years! But this time, Belinda and David's son sat in the courtroom behind his dad, and he was now 23 years old. And what was really sad is that he had not seen Belinda's family since he was really little. So this was the first time that her family was seeing the little boy, who's now a man.
Right. That's got to be weird.
It was really weird because David was able to keep him, well, and Heather too, were able to keep them away from the son because they believed that David had killed Belinda, that he was the reason that she was dead.
So at this point...
And they were very vocal about it.
Okay. So at this point, Heather is still standing by him.
Yeah.
Taking care of everything.
She was still married to him, and she was fully committed to raising the son.
Huh.
Like I said before, I think she fell in love with being a mom to the son, not necessarily David, is my opinion.
Seems reasonable.
Okay. The case was being tried by a new prosecution team and a new defense team, so everything was wiped clean. And during this trial, Heather filed for divorce from David.
She's finally admitting.
She's done, I think.
Yeah.
Well, because the son was now 23. He was on his own.
That's true.
He was grown, and she had legally adopted him as well. So I don't think she needed to be married to David anymore.
No. And did she make any new kids with David?
No. They never had kids together.
Huh.
She was 100% completely devoted to Belinda's son and raising him. Wow. During the time that David was in prison, she was everything. Isn't that wild? This is why you can't hate her.
I don't hate her.
No. I mean, anybody out there, we can be disappointed in the choices that she made, but to really make her a villain, I think is unfair to the little boy.
Yeah.
Because that's his mom now.
That's true. He has no one else.
He has no one else. He had no one else but her. Well, and David's family, but whatever. The defense's strategy was to show the jury that there was more circumstantial evidence against Riley Joe Sanders than there was for David Temple, and that Belinda was scared of Joe. The state actually called Joe up to the witness stand first so that they could kind of control the narrative because they knew what the defense was going to do.
Sure.
Joe Sanders was now a clean-cut, good-looking 37-year-old. He had really done a lot with his life at this time. He once again denied any involvement in the murder of his teacher, Belinda. He actually really liked Mrs. Temple and respected her, saying that she was the only teacher who seemed interested in his life and who would say hi to him in the hallways. Joe said that he had skipped last period with a friend on the day of the murder and that they had arrived at Joe's house around 2 p.m. They grabbed Joe's stash, you know, marijuana, and then drove around in the friend's car till about 3:30. Arriving back at Joe's and grabbing a snack, another friend picked them up and they drove over to another person's house to score some more weed. But without any money, they couldn't purchase any.
Yeah, it's hard to get weed without money.
Yeah. Joe got in a fight with these friends over calling shotgun and decided to walk home. I think that shows the maturity level of this group of friends.
Yeah.
That they're going to get in a fight over calling shotgun.
While in the process of trying to get weed.
Right.
Sure.
But they're so mature that Joe is going to go into a house and kill Belinda and be able to keep this a secret for the next over 20 years.
Yeah, I'm not buying it.
Yeah, I know. That's what I was reading into it. Joe walked home and arrived between 4:20 and 4:30, where the friends were waiting. The friends had driven to his house and just waited for him while Joe, you know, sulked and walked home. They made up and drove to a Quickie Mart to buy cigarettes.
Then sure.
Joe was dropped off at his house around 4:40. Joe lay down on the couch and fell asleep. Now, the defense is saying that she was killed around 4:30 when David is seen on CCTV footage at the grocery store. If Joe was dropped off at his house around 4:40, he could have done it during that time.
It's possible.
Is what they're saying.
Yeah.
So he fell down. He lay down and fell asleep. His dad woke him up around 6 p.m., and they went out front and saw police vehicles lining the street. Joe's father testified that his son was given free range with the guns in the house, including a 12-gauge shotgun that was in the home around the time of the murder, but that his dad no longer had. I actually think the gun was confiscated and put into evidence. That's kind of what I got from that.
Okay.
Now, a childhood friend and hunting buddy of David's testified that he did see David with a 12-gauge shotgun on multiple occasions, but David's saying he never owned one. And friends who helped David move out of the home that he shared with Belinda testified to seeing shotgun bullets in a cardboard box, and it rattled when they shook it. So there were bullets missing in that box, but that box has never been found.
Hmm.
So why would you have shotgun shells if you didn't have a shotgun?
I wouldn't think you would.
Right.
Unless you go out hunting with friends or shooting with friends, so you just grab some so there's extra.
Okay, like, hey, I'll bring the bullets, you bring the gun.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
And I also read that David and his brothers were given 12-gauge shotguns for Christmas one year, but the Temple family says that the shotguns were given to the oldest son and the youngest son. David was gifted a rifle because it was cheaper, which I have to call bullcrap on that. On this one, because David was the golden child, the high school and college football star, the child that never had to answer for any of his wrongdoings, protected by everyone, even before this. So there's no way that David would have been given the cheaper gun.
It doesn't sound like it.
No, he would have been given exactly what his brothers got.
Yeah.
Or he would have been given the shotgun and his brothers be given the rifle, is my opinion of what I read about the family dynamics.
Depends on the rifle, because most rifles cost more than shotguns.
Okay, but the dad is saying they got him a rifle because it was cheaper. So they're giving the golden child the cheaper gift.
Right.
Which that doesn't make sense to me. Right?
Yeah, no, that doesn't make sense.
Okay, thank you. The timeline of the errands were called into question. David and the son are seen leaving the grocery store at 4:36 and not entering the Home Depot till 5:14. That's 36 minutes in between. But at most, the driving distance between the two locations was 15 minutes. So what had David done with the extra 21 minutes? He's unaccounted for 21 extra minutes.
That's a long time.
It is. Well, a man who knew David from high school testified to seeing David on Katie Hockley Road between 4:50 and 5 p.m., which is a totally different route than what David had testified to. This was way north of where David said that he was, and this was also the area where his parents lived. And the witness even waved at David, but he never waved back. And he does believe that David never saw him.
Okay.
Do you know what's around Katie Hockley Road?
I do not.
Rice fields.
Oh, okay.
Miles and miles of rice fields.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think they have as many rice fields as like Biggs, California.
Probably not.
But they are well known for their rice fields.
Yeah.
Now, this is a perfect area to ditch a shotgun, right?
Oh, gosh, yeah. Wouldn't be hard.
Anyone who lives near rice fields, you know that this these areas are constantly either filled with water and the soil's really soft. You could really hide anything in these rice fields. They're being irrigated.
Makes sense.
Right?
Yeah. Can make stuff disappear.
Absolutely, especially in a rice field.
Oh, yeah.
The state believes that David murdered Belinda soon after she arrived home, which is why she was still wearing her shoes and her driving glasses. They believe that David forced her at gunpoint up the stairs and into the master closet, not necessarily that she was chased, that she walked in the door and he held a gun to her and forced her up there. Belinda was forced to kneel down, and then David put the barrel of the gun to the back of his wife's head and pulled the trigger, murdering not only Belinda, but the baby girl as well.
Why would he want to kill his unborn child?
According to some of their friends, he didn't seem very excited to be having another baby.
So he's a selfish prick.
Mm-hmm. And okay. That he wasn't super excited to be having the son at first, but then kind of grew into the role and became a really good dad. And that's really all he wanted was just the son. The son was given Motrin for his fever and was asleep during the confrontation, which, like you said, a shotgun blast in a house is deafening. A little boy at 3 years old would wake up, even if he's taken Motrin.
And oh, probably.
And yeah. Would that really be something that you'd forget? Because I do know that the son was interviewed and never said anything about hearing anything.
Yeah, but he's trying to recall stuff that happened when he was...
No, but even when he was three, there was nothing. David woke him up, woke the son up, and they left to run errands so that David could establish an alibi, arriving at the grocery store at 4:32, because he knew he would be on camera.
Mm-hmm.
After arriving home, David then staged the burglary scene, opening the back door and breaking the window, grabbed the son, and ran across the street to the neighbors, starting his act. Because like the prosecution attorney showed during the trial, was that you can stage a burglary scene really fast. You just start knocking stuff over and hit the window, and because nothing was stolen.
Except David didn't have any experience in it.
No, he just did what he thought a burglar would do, would be knock okay. over the TV and open some drawers.
Just to look like there was some activity going on.
That somebody was in the house and maybe Belinda interrupted something. On August 8th, 2019, the case was handed over to the jury. After 8 hours of deliberations, the jury came back with a guilty verdict. During the sentencing hearing, the son testified on behalf of his dad. He said that he never believed that his dad murdered his mom and that he believes his dad's version of the events 100%. It was interesting because when asked about his mom, he said that Belinda was his biological mom, but that Heather was the mom who raised him. So he was always confused when they'd say, your mom.
And that's where you're talking about, like, Heather's really awesome in that sense.
Right. She definitely stepped into that role for him. The jury deliberated on David's sentencing for 20 hours before being brought back into the courtroom. The judge read out loud that the jury could not come to agreement on David's sentence, and the judge declared a mistrial. Two jury members wanted probation, six wanted 30 to 40 years in prison, and four jurors were holding out for life. David's resentencing trial was delayed until April of 2023. So just a few months ago, due in part to the coronavirus pandemic.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. But he was still in prison. He wasn't allowed bail. So he spent the next couple years in prison waiting for sentencing. The trial lasted 2 weeks and contained most of the same information and evidence presented at the first and second trials. And on April 21st, the jury deliberated for less than 2 hours and sentenced 54-year-old David Temple to life in prison again, and that he must pay a $10,000 fine.
That's it?
That's it. That was a lot of money that Texas paid to keep this guy.
And he was how, 54?
He was 54.
But he was 30 when it happened.
Yes.
Good God.
I know, right?
That's almost a whole career.
Yeah, he could have retired by then.
24 years. Man.
Isn't that wild?
So I wonder where he is now.
He's in Texas.
Somewhere.
He's in Texas. Do you want to see pictures of the people that I've been telling you about?
Absolutely, I do.
Okay. We need to start doing this more. This is David and Belinda at their wedding.
He's exactly what I pictured.
Isn't he, though? He's like Quasimodo a little bit to me.
His neck is bigger than his head. Like it's the same, you know, it's a little wider. It could be the angle. She seems very sweet.
She was a wonderful person.
Huh.
Really loved helping people, especially kids.
Yeah.
Really sad. Much better person than me.
Yeah, he looks like no neck of the north there with the, he's got a big old thick stump on his shoulders there.
He is a big guy.
Yeah.
I mean, no steroid use, none at all.
He kind of looks like an older version of the older brother from Home Alone, Buzz.
He does. He does. I mean, they were a very attractive family. And the son was a cutie pie.
Oh, yeah. That's probably a better picture.
Yeah, it's a better picture.
He doesn't look as... He looks like a football player.
Absolutely.
The son looks like he's super sweet. She looks like an awesome mom, an awesome wife.
She was. Do you want to see Heather?
Yeah, I guess.
I'll find a good picture of her. Some pictures aren't very good, but this one's pretty good. She's on the testifying on the stand.
All right, I can see it. She looks like the one that would be more fun in bed.
Oh.
The other one? Okay, this is sad.
Okay.
Don't women yell at me. Just being honest here. Belinda looks like an awesome wife and a mother. Heather looks like the one that would be fun. Is that sad?
No.
I don't know how else to describe it.
Yes, Belinda looks very maternal.
Yeah, so if you have the wife that's a great wife and mother, but you have Heather, who's your coworker, and she's kind of flirty, and she's, you know.
Mm-hmm. Sticking those boobs up in your face.
Yeah.
I know.
You know, she looks like she's probably more fun. Now, granted, that's a picture of her on the stand, so she's not all dolled up.
No.
But I can see it. I can, yeah.
So this is the son who I'm not going to share, but this is Heather, like when he's older. He played football too.
Yeah, no, she's cute.
She's Heather. Yeah, she's cute.
Yeah.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
And she did a great job with the son. Now, I know the son's name. Just in case this is your first time listening to this show, I know everybody's name. I just choose not to use it because it's not appropriate.
I don't think
it's... In my opinion.
I don't think it's your job or our job to put that out. Obviously, people want to look it up. They can find it. But if you're putting it out, it's kind of like you are causing them to be publicized.
Well, and I'm telling his parents' story. I'm not telling his story.
Yeah. I mean, we are publicizing it in a way, sort of. We're calling attention to something that's already been publicized.
Right.
But
I'm just sharing.
But yeah, but I don't think.
Yeah, I just sometimes people are like, oh, she doesn't even know their name. Yes, I know their name. I choose not to share children's names.
Yeah, I don't think it's necessary.
And witnesses. There were a lot of witnesses. I could have called them out, but I didn't because they really didn't make any difference in the story to say their name and to kind of put them back out there again.
Yeah.
David's attorneys are once again appealing his conviction and sentencing.
Of course.
Fun fact. You ready for a fun fact?
Absolutely, I am.
Renee Zellweger was a cheerleader for Katy High School during the years that David was a big old football star.
No.
Go Tigers.
So she knows him.
And she doesn't really talk about it. She okay, never
talks
about
no
it.
There's no way she doesn't know him. If she's
oh,
a
she
cheerleader.
Knows him.
Yeah,
absolutely.
If there's a cheerleader, knows of him, I mean. If she's a cheerleader, was a cheerleader, and he was the star.
Yeah, she
golden boy
for him. Mm-hmm.
Then she.
Yeah. So, Katy, Texas, you're famous for an Academy Award winning actress and
Rennie.
A wife killer.
That's
so
nice.
Lucky you.
Yeah. Why not?
Well, Daniel, what did you think of my case?
I don't get it. I don't understand why I go through with that. Obviously, his defense team is saying he didn't do it, but we all know the truth.
Well, and what's interesting to me is that he has never slipped up. He has never told a cellmate. He's never said anything to anybody about doing this, about being the reason that she is dead.
Okay. I know this isn't justice, but if not him, then who?
The only other person could have been Riley Joe Sanders is what they're saying, but there's no physical evidence against him either. And from everybody who talked about his character, Riley or Joe, his character was way more positive than what anybody said about David's character.
Yeah. And in a way, I think because the way the prosecution portrayed David, I think the jury would turn on him every time. It's hard not to think he's a big, giant, steaming piece of crap.
Well, and when he would go up on the stand and kind of tell his story, he was very emotionless. So there wasn't a lot of emotion when it came to finding his wife dead. There really wasn't.
But you always see these documentaries and people talking about how lawyers win cases, jury trials. Mm-hmm. It's not about the evidence. It's about swaying the jury.
Yeah, you're playing to the jury.
So if you can get the jury to hate the defendant, then it doesn't matter. They're gonna fill in the blanks. They're going to make that assumption. They're gonna want to believe that he did it.
Yeah, and he was cheating on Sunshine Girl.
Yeah. Yeah. And it would be very hard for me not to immediately hold all that against him, even though there wasn't perfect evidence. So then a defense attorney would say, well, that doesn't matter and that's not fair because it has to be foolproof.
And the only people really defending David has always been his family. People who were couple friends with them turned on him real fast because they knew.
Okay, but the family, I dismiss the family immediately.
So does most people.
Because they are the, we're going to ignore him, all the negative stuff, and try and get him to get away with things because in the name of he's our golden child football star, which means you created a monster.
Absolutely.
They created a monster and they don't want to believe that they did. So of course they're going to defend him because they're actually defending themselves.
And it's really hard to find people who defend David, honestly, or who like David after listening to this story because of the things that you hear about him. And we all know people like this, and we all know parents and families like this, which just leave a really bad taste in your mouth. Kids are not perfect. Do not put your kids on a pedestal.
No.
You're going to fail.
Well, you're going to fail your kids. You're failing
Absolutely.
Them. That's what we all have to remember as marginally decent parents. We're not doing them any favors.
No.
If you allow your kid to get away with stuff, and then what's going to be the next thing they do? And the next thing, and pretty soon, I'm not saying they're going to commit murder, but at what point are you going to put your foot down and go, no, that's right. Wrong. You cannot do that. And we will no longer support you. A lot of times you hear people doing it after a whole lifetime of letting them get away with it. And then they can't figure out why they're not getting through to them. It seems like, well, but it's tough. I mean, it's tough for us as parents to basically say no to kids, you know, or our kids. I mean,
man, they really thought that David was going to be this NFL football star, and they put all of the eggs into this basket. And in reality, he was too short. He was too short to play for the NFL. He was even too short to play for Notre Dame or one of those big schools, like big football schools. I think it was Notre Dame at that time. But
I can relate because I'm about the same height as him. And that's the only thing that prevented me from being a star.
Was your height?
Oh, absolutely. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And your neck size?
Right. Yeah.
If you had a bigger neck.
If I had a bigger neck, then you wouldn't have dated me.
All right. Well, that's my case. Sorry I had to split it into two people, but I was losing Daniel quick. So I had to bring him back.
I need something. I can't. It can't go on forever.
Well, most of my information came from the book Shattered by Catherine Casey. And I read a ton of articles and I found David's appeal records. And I did watch a 2020 episode on this case. So there you go.
Being hindsight, 2020.
Oh, I didn't know where you're going with that.
I didn't either. Just...
All right, Danny, we got some Patreon shout outs. I wrote them out for you.
Shout. Shout. Let it all out. Thank you guys so much for supporting our humble podcast. And really want to thank Eve G. Thank you, Eve. Julie M. Thanks, Julie. Haley F. Thank you, Haley. Rose K. Thank you, Rose. You guys, thank you very much. We really appreciate it. Melissa puts a lot of work into it. And I put a lot less. So,
yes, thank you so much. It really is just wonderful, all of you coming alongside of us. And be careful.
Because marriage is a life sentence.
And divorce is always the better option.
Do it.
Bye.
Bye.